All right, welcome everybody. I guess I should turn the SAM on and initialize it. I am Steve Roberts, and I have Todd Foster with me. We are Cancel the Cabal. Of course, I'm having all kinds of very, very nice technical glitches, live stream, all kinds of good stuff. My video's not on live stream tonight, so I might just put Todd up there the whole night. I bet Laurie will like that. Welcome MSI, welcome Truth Broadcast Network. I don't know what in the world I'm going to have to do here. I got to find something out. I don't know whether something me and Nick Nomek worked on changed something or not. I just don't know.
I'm trying to find out. Is it giving you any specific error message or?
Yeah, it shows my video has lost signal. So I don't know what's going on. But nobody wants to see my face tonight anyway, so I'll just put you up there until I can get things figured out. I'll just put you up on there. Somebody tell me in the chat rooms whether we have audio tonight. Give me some smiley faces and give me a little yes in the Truth Broadcast Network and a yes in the MSI, if you could, please. All right. Looks like we got good audio. Thank you, Lori. Okay. I don't know what's going on with my particular video. I have a suspicion me and Nick changed something around somewhere, and that could be a problem. But I don't know. But, Todd, since I haven't had a chance to talk to you today, what we are going to talk about is the what's called the official offer. And what I will do is I will pass a link onto you in the Skype chat.
Okay.
And I will put this up on the screen and we will go over it together.
All right. Sounds good.
Yeah. Loud and clear. Thanks, Johnny. Okay, here we go in the chat room. Todd, I'm sorry. Or you can go to that link and we will check it out together.
Okay.
And actually, what I'm going to do is I'm going to take you off the screen and bring Ed up on the screen.
Yeah, that would be good. Yes, that way everybody can see it.
Everybody can see it and possibly hear it. We'll go over this a little bit first. Talking over it, reading it, going over it a little bit, and hopefully we'll get a call in also from somebody that knows a lot more than you and I. Would be really, really nice. Are you looking at the live stream screen there, Todd?
Yes. Yeah, I can see all your icons there.
Okay. It says the official offer, mortgage loan overdraft. Offer to bank by person to now operate on account 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. No amount of euros affected monthly as satisfaction on all account demands and obligations. This is... what they have told me is somebody will write out on a paper an offer to a bank. If somebody is back payments on their mortgage or down so many payments or they're being threatened for eviction and foreclosure, what this will do is help get them out of danger. And I've been told by at least two or three people now that no court on the planet can reject this as a defense if you get hauled into court. Now, I'm not totally positive how all this works, but what the official offer is somebody writes down on paper, which is more official than most anything else, and then they hand this over to the bank with a check on how much they want to pay. Like, say their mortgage is $700 a month, but they don't have $700. They're scraping by, you know. Things happen, Todd. As you know, everybody knows.
Yep.
They might only have $500 for the entire for their entire finances. And what this will do is somebody can write on this official offer they want to pay the bank $200 this month on their mortgage.
Yeah.
And the banks will try to get out of accepting this $200 as payment. They will scream, holler, and kick up dust and do all kinds of things to try to get that $700. But if it's officially written down on paper, there's nothing they can do about it. They actually have to accept it when it comes down to it. So, I also have a couple of videos that about three people have made two videos. Or I'm sorry, about four people have made two videos. I have condensed them over into MP3s, and if you want to mute your microphone, and I will do the same.
Okay.
We can listen to them.
All right, sounds good. Let's do that.
All right. Yeah. It doesn't matter which one you can listen to the live stream, or you can listen to the MSI, because, well, as I said, me and Nick worked on something, and we'll be able to hear them both. So I'll be able to hear it no matter what, but you'll have to just mute your microphone.
Okay.
So what I'm going to do is I'm going to pop the first one in. This one's made by T.I. and John McCann. I'll put that one in the player, and it's almost 12 minutes long, so we'll listen to that one first. Let me get my mixer up here so I can mute myself. I don't want to mess up and start a loop. I can just see myself doing something like that. Turn the stream on and have a loop going. So I'm going to mute everything.
Time to cancel the cabal with Stephen Roberts on MSI Radio.
Yo, this is Truthful Irish, and I have another caller on the line. Hello, Marla, in the chat box. Yes, you did miss Norman. Norman was on me earlier on, and it was brilliant. So, again, thanks to Norman. Right now, though, I have John McCann on the line with me, and John wanted to call in and talk to me because he was listening to me going on about those stories there and how the banks have been treating people and what they're saying about us now. And how the media is portraying all this. And John decided to call in. How are you doing, John? Welcome on.
All right, T.I. How are you?
I'm well.
I said I better call in before you blow a gasket, you know? Well, it's just another sign that they're trying to put down and put the blame back onto the people for trying to buy a house and trying to find somewhere to live.
I know. They're absolutely
using terms like, what's the term? I can't even think of the term now.
Well, all I know is that the nerve of the Irish people, to want to own their own home is the cheekiest, you know?
Strategic defaulters.
Strategic defaulters, absolutely. I mean, like, they do just create these new names, you know what I mean? And people lap it up. People genuinely lap it up. If you read the comments on thejournal.ie, you can see that people genuinely believe that 35% of people in arrears are deliberately doing it. Now, I'm not saying that there aren't strategic defaulters out there. I'm sure there probably is, you know. There would be one or two, I'd say, who'd look at the banks and say, well, screw you, you ripped us off, so I'm going to rip you off. I'm sure there are some out there, but not 35% of the borrowers. Absolutely not.
I agree with you. There has to be, you know, a few people, depending on their circumstances. It depends on your circumstances. You know, some people might be in a position to do that, and but most people I know are not in that position to do that, and never have been. So this is just another propaganda ploy that they're using again. It used to be, in the beginning, it was all the fault of subprime lenders, meaning that the people they lent to were subprime and they were lower than low, and now we have strategic defaulters, so we're all planning strategies out here to default.
Oh yeah, that's the way they make it sound though, isn't it? It's like a collective group of people have all gotten together and sat down together and went, how can we rip off the banks? Let's figure out a way of screwing with the banks, you know? That's not the case. It just isn't the case, you know?
And what you're saying there, like, they have been bailed out and everything else. It's just maddening, and I was just getting really frustrated listening to you there.
Driving
me mad. I wasn't going to turn you off, but I was hopping mad about what was going on, you know. And I have been all week listening and looking at this sort of stuff, because I'm trying to ignore these people as much as I possibly can, and it is very difficult, and you're bringing it to the fore. And perhaps there's people, you know, listening on Facebook and all the rest of us that probably won't listen to other shows or whatever, you know, and they might be in those circumstances now at the moment with problems with their mortgage. And as you know, people here on MSI, we have solutions for these problems for anybody who is in that particular situation. And I think it's important that we always get this message out. I keep harping on about it, and I'm going to keep harping on about it, because people are made, if you're looking at mainstream media, as you know, as you've been reading out and going through the, filtering through the papers and everything else, that it's a constant barrage coming at people day in, day out. And I think it's not good for your spirit, it's not good for people's health, it's not good for anything, even if you're not in that particular situation. But if you are in that particular situation, and you're not hearing remedies from anybody, I believe during the week the supposed eviction, or that was supposed to be going on Wednesday, I'd heard through the grapevine that, you know, that lady didn't get much help, and she didn't get any encouragement except from the people from MSI and the eviction task force people. But what she was told, I think, was to hand in her keys. So this is the kind of thing that people are put up against day in, day out, that there is no recourse, there is no remedy. Just hand in your keys, give up the ghost, get rid of your house, or move to a smaller house, you know, as if everybody's living in 15-room mansions, you know.
Yeah.
We come into a smaller box, and you'd be happy there. And
we've seen that as well with the lady who has been paying her mortgage for 10 years with permanent TSB. She's running her own business as well, and the business, of course, due to the economic downturn, she's not making as much money as she used to. So she came to an agreement with the bank, whereby she was paying the interest only, and she hadn't defaulted, she hadn't messed up on any of that whatsoever, and she had an overdraft with the bank, and she was €200 in arrears with her overdraft, and the bank's solution was, sell your house, missus. You know, and
it's just incredible stuff.
For €200, like, sell your house. And she's been up to the agreement, she's been doing everything. And now she is out of falling into this bracket, through no fault of her own, of being an uncooperative borrower. I mean, it's such a loose and vague term. It's such a loose and vague term that they can call anybody an uncooperative borrower and cite any number of reasons that they can be called that. And of course, the banks themselves wrote this legislation so they can do what they want with it, you know?
Yeah, and they have the full hand there of all the media backing them to anything they say, hanging on every syllable that they use and words that they use, which is craftily and carefully manipulating the use of words to frighten people. And this seems to be the norm now. If you're in power, if you're in a position of any description, use words to frighten people. The government are doing it. Everything, you've just heard Norman earlier on, his battle against that big machine there is amazing listening to him. So But what I'm trying to say is, I suppose that for anybody who is not normally on MSI and is tuned in through Facebook or whatever, if you're in this particular predicament, the solution for mortgages are here on MSI. And it's a very simple solution. And the solution is what we call the official offer. And it goes like this. If you're paying €1,000 a month, let's say, and you can only afford a different figure, 400, 500, 200, 300. What you do is you go into the bank and you pay them whatever you can afford, or you write to them and tell them that this is official offer and I'm going to pay on this account X amount of money per month in satisfaction of all agreements. And post it off or send it by check or do all that. And, or alternatively go into your bank, if you can go to a bank, and pay it across the counter. And effectively then you are starting a different process. And that process is going to probably give you some time, a couple of years or whatever, to change. Your circumstances might change. At the same time, it's going to give you relief from the constant barrage from these people threatening you, phoning you and all of that kind of thing.
Yeah.
And they cannot, in any court in the land, take your home away from you if you're doing this process.
And that of course is due to your intent.
Yes, your intent is to pay some money. You just haven't got the money to pay all of it at this point in time.
Yeah.
And I would advise people to try this and not pay their mortgage, if at all possible. Because most people fall behind and they say, well, hey, we're going to catch up and we're going to do this. Oh, maybe it's better if we just don't pay it. Then you get into that frame of mind where, well, look, maybe it'd be better if we just let the house go and maybe we can sell it and maybe we can do this, and, you know.
Yeah.
Because they're being pressurized. So that's kind of it, really. And I just want to, in all the doom and gloom that we see every day, and I know it's having a huge effect on me by listening to these people, or even I don't listen to them. I don't turn on the radio and I don't turn on the television, but I see snippets of it on Facebook and I see links put up in MSI about all these things constantly, day in, day out. And it's very wearing and it's very disturbing on our psyche and our spirit and everything else as a people and as a nation. And the more people that did the official offer would then put pressure on the banks. So we would put the ball back into their court by doing this. And I can assure people that this is not illegal to do. It is legal. It has been endorsed by the Master of the High Court, Mr. Honahan himself, on Marion Finucane, if you want to podcast that, or look it up, or go back through the RTE's podcasts, you will find it there. So really, I thought I would, you know, show a glimmer of hope to people out there, and the more people that hear it, and the more often that they hear it, it might strike a chord with somebody that's listening out there tonight, and that's what we're all about here in MSI.
Absolutely. Even if we can only help one family, it's worth our while, you know. It's worth our while, even if we can only help one family. But of course, our aim is to help as many people as possible. And the official offer itself is brilliant. And I've talked about that here on MSI Radio, well, TNS Radio at the start. And I had callers on who were using the official offer and, you know, are relieved as a result of having found out that information. Folks, if you want to know more about the official offer, you can simply Google the official offer, of course. But we do know that there are a lot of Facebook users that listen to us through Facebook on the little players there. If you go up to the top of the Facebook page there and just type in the official offer, you will find a group and all of the information and the templates and everything you need to know is there. Or if you want to know more, you can come over here to www.msiradio.com and you can come into our chat box, which is always on the go. The chat box is never empty and there's always somebody in there who can point you in the direction or point you into pods, point you in the direction of the official offer. Information for the official offer, of course, is also available on YouTube. It's all there, folks. Do your homework. And once you do your homework on this, it will free you. It will free you. It'll take an awful lot of that pressure, as John just described. It lifts that pressure straight up off of your shoulders. And it gives you the space to breathe, think, and, you know, and sort out your life. It'll give you that opportunity. You know, the official offer, as John says, is completely legal, backed solidly in contract law. It's not a gimmick. It's a genuine solution. It's a genuine solution, and we do recommend it, and we genuinely do. Because, as we know, even if you are paying your mortgage, and even if you are keeping up with all of that, in order to keep up with the mortgages, you're paying less for other things, like less on groceries, less on clothing, less on fuel, less on things that we need. And this week...
All right. Are you guys got your feeds muted there?
I've been muted out, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah,
okay.
I'm muted, yeah.
All right. I'm going to check and see out what Johnny Meath says there in the chat room. So give me a second here. Oh, an eviction tomorrow. Oh, let me see here. He wants me to mention something. Oh, yeah, eviction notice or eviction alert. Just received notice that a family are going to be evicted tomorrow afternoon. Man has three children under 12 years of age, and his wife sadly passed away 2 years ago. We have offered to help them stay in their home. We will have the full details in the morning. We may need you all tomorrow. Meath, cabin border area. Address and details to follow. So, that's something pretty important.
Yeah, you know, okay. What's interesting, Steve, is I've actually seen video where they'll have people come out to someone's home, you know, to just simply try to help them from being evicted and to help address the, quote, authorities or whomever, you know, shows up at the house. And they will actually send out SWAT teams to evict people from their homes simply because therein lies the truth. They're agents of the state protecting the state, which is a corporation, which is thereby connected to the banks, which are corporations.
Yes, yes. Well, Nick, T.I. said he would come on after a little bit, after we played the second pod. Would you like, I don't know, anything you would like to discuss before we do go on to this second pod here? Did I characterize the official offer somewhat in my description?
I think it's getting it, and it, you know, it's something. I mean, it is one thing. It's a very good little method. I think mainly because it's one thing we can take outside. You know, we can spend a long time. You know, it's quite hard to explain to people without getting strange looks when you try and say you're not a person. And this capital letters name isn't you, and some of the, you know, some of the bigger concepts that we might deal with. The official offer is actually, it is specifically what we are doing. It's a solution. It's something you can give to anyone. It's simple. There are situations we've had in this country where it doesn't work, but that's very specific to us because, we've had people where they've used it in terms of, utility bills or water bills. There is a means that they can actually go around this to the benefit system, but they shouldn't be able to if you, I mean, in a sense, this is the most honorable way to progress.
Okay.
I mean, even from certain things before I even got involved in anything to do with MSI or looking outside the system, I think one of the fundamentals I knew, I actually had to deal with having to struggle to keep a mortgage and in the end giving it up. You know, I just managed to sell up and get out. But
yeah,
if I knew then what I know now, I might still have that, a better roof over my head.
Absolutely.
I mean, I'd certainly say, you know, you would be able to confirm just by looking around a lot of other places that advise you is if you have a problem with a debt, if, you know, the tendency is for a lot of people to run away and hide. This actually gives you a very simple method to address it. And I think there's a principle when you go through it, I think Vin made the principle and it does get into contract law, but without getting too complex, it's what Vin called adequate performance.
Okay.
You can't offer full performance on the debt. You can't pay them the full amount. what you can do is if you can give them as much as possible.
Right, right.
Within your means.
Right.
You may not be all the way there, but effectively, you know, given they have other things to deal with, you are saying, you know, we can deal with it this way and I can pay you this amount. It's not possible for me to pay the full amount.
Right.
But you are, I mean, and you have to try and do it. You know, if someone thinks they can do it and say, I'll give you a dollar a month, and thinks they can put in some ridiculously low figure, that isn't going to prevent anything. And, you know, part of this is you shouldn't really have to be going into court, but if you have to deal with it, you can, you know, if you wanted to actually engage someone, you can say, I can show you my figures. I can show you what I'm living on for everything else. I can show you I'm giving as much as I possibly can.
Yeah, but that's probably not necessary, though, is it?
You shouldn't really need to go there, because ultimately the basis of being in a court is there is a dispute. And, you know, generally when you're going to court, certainly over a mortgage, the main thing they're going for is non-payment. But you don't fit that category. You are not a non-payer. You are actually making payment. May not be as much as they want, but you're making payment. And, you know, I'd even seen certain things in terms of people who've done a more mainstream route, where they have actually been trying to make that sort of effort. Judges have been known to throw those cases out, even without large legal precedents or clever arguments. But the way this is laid out, and I know, you know, it's quite rare, I think, that MSI actually puts a template letter out. Because I think in some ways it's, you know, it's good to encourage people to go through the learning process and understand how you can refine and do your own letter in your own voice, which has a lot more weight. But this is so strong, and I think people have literally refined that letter down. And, you know, it's not necessarily an easy concept if it's all brand new to you. It's certainly worth, where we've got the podcasts, of finding those official offer ones. And I know, I mean, we are quite blessed now with MSI that we have quite a lot of shows that we have to keep up with. When there were a few more gaps, I would actually be playing these podcasts. And sometimes it can be, you know, 6, 7, 8, 9 times. And you hear it and listen to it, and you will always find a little bit extra out of it. And you always get a bit more. But it does work on specific levels, in that you don't have to be afraid of them for a start. And, you know, provided you are being genuine with what you're offering them and go about it in a very specific way. And yes, they don't like it. They will do what they can. And, you know, I think we can go into another aspect in where you are dealing with a contract of, you make an offer, you get a counteroffer, you make a counteroffer.
Yeah.
They will try and actually break you out of that agreement.
Sure.
And, you know, it's when you start to operate it on the surface, if someone is in absolute dire straits, it's a case of you can start this quite simply, but in order to keep going, they will come at you and they will try tactics, and you can feed in a little bit more information to say, you just want to be careful of how you phrase things.
Yeah.
And, you know, in some ways you can sort of do it to a bit of a formula, but it's good to know how it's working.
I remember almost 10 years ago now, Nick, it was right around this time. Well, it was nine years ago, right around this time.
Mm-hmm.
I was starting to lose my home. I was in foreclosure. It was like 8 or 9 months back. I had just stopped paying the mortgage, and the bank started the foreclosure procedures.
Mm-hmm.
And I was going through a bankruptcy lawyer. And he was telling me how to keep my finances in check to where I wouldn't, go in the hole every single month.
Mm-hmm.
And he would tell me that the credit card bills, What else would he tell me? My medical bills and some other bills. He might have even been utilities, but I'm not positive. He said I could pay little amounts on them, and they would work with me on it. But he didn't go as far as to telling me on the mortgage I could have done something like that. That's where he kept his little secret to himself.
I think, I mean, you, some of this, you know, I think there's certain things of having, I was never directly involved. Some of the people I've worked with were debt counsellors. And I think there's certain things here that they would be quite happy to see someone using the official offer. I think it accords with what they do. When it comes to dealing with a phone bill, an electric bill, certain things like that. But right. I think they are still, because they're part of the mainstream, it's a case of you don't really want to do this with your mortgage.
Yeah.
And I know, I mean, I actually had it in terms of, you know, I got ill. I very quickly lost my job. And I knew I had to sort of, you know, in a sense, I had certain amounts of knowledge from things I'd done. I mean, the first thing I did was, because of the way I had a loan set up, first thing I did was I went to double check. I thought I knew there was something in the terms of the loan, and they had a specific clause which said a mortgage holiday. And I rang them up and I said, you know, is this still true? Does this apply? And they said, yes. And they said, you can have up to 12 months. I said, I'll have the 12 months. And I thought, okay, I will immediately just buy the time. That was fine. I didn't recover. And by the end of it, but within that time span, the welfare system here does actually give some help. And part of the way the welfare system is that they will actually pay it straight to your mortgage people. You don't actually get to touch that money.
Okay.
This is how, you know, they take the housing market very seriously. They're not, you know, they did have a spate where people directly got the money and never paid it over. And part of the deal, basically, the banks and the people complained like crazy because they were not getting their money they should have. The deal with the government was, okay, you will get the money direct. So, like, where your welfare, you know, you'd get a letter saying your welfare check is actually X amount per week, say $200. But because $150 of that is interest on your mortgage payments, that's, you know, they only paid the very basic amount. We are taking that direct to them. And part of the deal on that was it's a case of they could not then repossess. You know, that was the concession they gained. So whilst I went into that, I think I had a situation of I had fallen for some of the ploys. You know, I had one loan that was being paid. I had another smaller loan and they paid a little bit of it because I'd actually done some work on the house. But I also had a third loan that I just raised off the property, like most people did, because they were throwing it at you. And I'd bought a nice vehicle and, you know, basically not spent on anything to do with the house. They weren't paying that and they got sticky. They actually turned to me, and I think this was part of where my journey came into official offer. I actually said to them, all right, I reluctantly negotiated, and they said, we want to see your budget. And I think having discussed it, they came back, they got the figures wrong and said, we think you can pay £50 a month. I said, I don't know how you can work that out. You know, I don't see where in what the numbers I've given you it works. So
they tried tricking you.
No, they hadn't. They'd actually, it was a genuine mistake.
Okay.
They'd actually looked at figures. I think I'd put down, say, I think like my welfare payments, I think I'd put down a monthly rate, and I think other figures were in weekly rates, and I think they'd not seen the conversion. Once we discussed it through, and they said, oh no, you really don't have any money. And the girl said, hang on a moment, I'll have to double check this. And she said, well, effectively, if you can pay a notional £10 every month. And I said, yeah, I can manage that in terms of, you know, £2.50 a week. It's a case of, it's a very small token amount just to prove the money, the debt is being serviced in their terms. So it's a case, as long as there's some activity there, you know, payments are being made. And I think, you know, as I say, this was something I was hearing in mainstream. You know, I had certain breaks and sort of dealt with the right people. I think I was lucky. I would very much doubt you will have people in that situation now being as charitable.
Yeah.
And I think, you know, they've even taken it further now. I think, you know, looking at the concept of official offer, if you're normally getting a monthly paycheck and, once a month, it normally your money rolls out from your paycheck to pay off whatever debts, they're actually saying, you know, you're not only going to maintain that payment, you're actually going to start paying them. You know, if you are not certain of your income, it's a case of pay them every week. And it, you know, it may seem inconsequential, but it's a case of I'm actually doing more than I originally, you know, we had an original agreement to, because instead of just paying you a large sum every month, I'm making sure that every week, as often as money comes to me, I am paying it out diligently. You know, even if there is a situation where a court starts to get involved, and it's very difficult for them to get their teeth into. Yeah. You know, again, we're in the situation of, most of the people who are hauled into courts here, they are saying the charge is non-payment.
Right. You got any questions or comments or anything, Todd?
I'm just intently listening because, it's sad that people have to go through this in the first place, because the entire banking system, the entire central banking system, is just a facade in and of itself. I mean, they created the system to enslave and control everyone. They can create money out of thin air. They can just type in some numbers into a computer and create money out of thin air. And I don't know if any of the listeners have seen this, but you can watch these YouTube videos and different documentaries where they show how the banking system works, and they literally create money and wealth out of thin air, meanwhile leading the rest of us to believe that they're this legitimate institution that gives us the ability to go apply for a loan and try to have a house, when it's all an illusion. They've just created a corporate banking system in which they can claim ownership to pretty much everything. So
absolutely. And I think, there are certainly the bigger issues. And I think even before I was here, before I actually managed to get to TNS, I was looking at other sites. You know, a few years back, I was actually quite avidly looking at Robert Menard, John Harris over here. And in that time, they were quite revelations. I would say there are certain flaws in the reasoning and reasons why we needed to move on from there. And I'm not going to for one minute dispute with Robert Menard. I sincerely believe that he is correct. There are bonds in our name. There are large pots of money. The problem is it's just a nightmare to try and access it. All of that stuff. Right. I accept it's there, but it's still too distant to actually be able to put something in place. And I think even for people, I've had lengthy discussions with certain people. I think there's certainly a couple of people who've come through TNS and MSI. I think there's people who are here, and at some point, lots of people have said you need to study trust law, you need to study constitutional law, and yes, you can sort of immerse yourself that and almost become one of them to go and fight on that territory. But I still don't, I still don't see that they're going to let you succeed. I think there's still certain areas they're going to fight like mad to not let you into.
Hey, Nick.
Right.
Yeah.
Lori's posted a link in the live stream chat there. It says Mike Montagna's Perfect Economy .com.
Yeah. I mean, this is, Mike used to be on here, and this is one of the things. This is, I mean, when you listen to Mike, Mike is a complete expert in what he does. You know, this is a guy who's basically broken down one topic for so many years. I mean, this is decades. his idea of mathematically perfect economy, I no way wish to speak as an expert, but it resonates. Something, you know, when you hear about it and the general concepts, I think, are phenomenal. And you can sort of see, you know, this is a way that actually works where the system we have doesn't. For me to go in depth and try and work it out, I mean, the general idea is no, interest is not a good thing. Interest is what eats away into the money supply. Again, we layer on things like that of fiat currency, and I think what Todd was saying before of, you know, you're not creating, you create currency with that signature, but they're also having so many bites of the cherry and trading that onwards.
Right, exactly.
And I think, there's the implications. I think where Mike is saying, if you wish to buy a house and it's structured for the lifetime of that building, and I think, you know, Mike would say, you build a house, you have a 100-year mortgage. I think, you know, there's other implications. I mean, the one thing I think on that is if you don't want to build a house with a 100-year lifespan, say you are a lazy builder and you think, I will use cheaper materials. If that house only has a 50-year lifespan, it's a case of, I can only sell it for half the price. It actually levels the playing field in other ways as well. When people come to make buying decisions, they're buying in terms of the lifespan, whereas now we live in such a disposable society and people would be looking at, you know, cost in terms of the life of the object as well. The playing field in other ways as well. When people come to make buying decisions.
Oh, I've got an echo.
Yeah, someone's got his feet on.
We live in such a disposable society. And people would be looking at.
Eat your feet, Doug.
Stephen, oh,
thank you.
Hi, someone.
Thank you. I don't want to have to listen to myself.
I know, it's bad enough coming out with one speaker rather than looping back at you. No, sorry, I'm only after walking in the door. I just switched the radio off there. I should be a bit more professional than that, shouldn't I?
Well, yeah. No.
We all should be.
Yeah. Yeah. Keep going anyway. No, you sound good.
Oh, I think I lost my thread there. I got all
echoing. You were talking about Mike Montagna. And the perfect
economy.
Yeah,
I mean, I think, you know, I used to listen to Mike Montagna and, you know, it's a case of I get into about 15, 20 minutes in, then my brain started melting.
Yeah.
And he knows, you know, he knew so well what he was going for. You know, this guy knew his subject inside out and backwards. And, you know, I won't admit it wasn't hard work. I think quite a few people tried to discuss it with him. And he would get a little bit sensitive if you used the wrong terminology at the wrong point. You know, he would get, and I could fully appreciate he was protective of it. And I think, as he said, many people have actually tried to, you know, take his message and claim it as their own with a twist. Yeah. And
that's true. Yeah, that's true. Now, Mike uses very technical language. Excellent at what he does, and his approach is absolutely necessary, because when we do, and we will push on with this and MPE, you're going to have to tackle the likes of these, what they call themselves economists. I mean, they know very little about real economy, but you're going to have to tackle these economists and these barristers and lawyers and all these idiots with their fancy nonsensical language. And Mike is ideal for that. I mean, he uses the most technical terminology, which is which can't be twisted, you know. And to the layman, to you or I, it may sound overly complex, overly complicated, but it's actually, it simplifies things so they can't be twisted, you know.
I have to say, I've got maths A levels and I struggled. Yeah, well, I thought I could handle some of those concepts, but it really does. The spirit of it, you know, the general principles, and, you know, it's not something we should do. That, you know, there is that tendency of, I know you're right, Mike, but I can't, you know, I've got about maybe 10% now, perhaps 15% of it, and I've not made that final connection. The whole circuit's not built, but I will go with it because I know, you know, the gut feeling is, and I think there's a lot of things that have happened on here. And even before you've actually worked it out in your head, you know you're in the right track.
Yeah.
Well, Nick, Doug, Todd, I was thinking about maybe popping in the 33-minute video and listening to that and then coming back and discussing some more. Would that be okay?
What video was it?
The one where Vin and Harry made about a 33-minute video.
Well, on your stick.
Yeah, that sounds good.
You're the boss, whatever your plan is.
Okay.
Yeah.
I want to get as much information out there as I can, and I've got it made up as a pod, so, and I've got it to where it'll play on the live stream now too, so everybody can hear it there.
It bears repeating a lot of times. You know, it's not something you will get first time you hear it.
Right, exactly. So we're going to have about a 33-minute break here. We can talk amongst ourselves while this is playing, though, but I just need to mute everything.
Yeah, cool.
So we'll be back in a little bit here, ladies and gentlemen.
Are the people that would most require this information?
In relation to the official offer, I believe the people who would most benefit and who require the information regarding that would be basically the people who are living in three-bedroom semi-detached houses, because I think they're the part of the population under most pressure at the moment, because anybody who's already, shall we say, heavily dependent on social welfare at the moment don't seem to be suffering the way people who have mortgages, for example. They don't seem to be affected in the same way.
Mm. Are you talking about people that have, say, €1,000 mortgage a month and who are struggling to put food on the table over paying their mortgage?
Absolutely. Because what happens is people who are trying to pay maybe a €1,200 or €1,500 a month mortgage, suddenly if they lose a job or if that situation or circumstance alters, they then lack the extra currency to take care of things that weren't a problem in the past. So when they adopted all these obligations, these debts, these credit cards, at the time it seemed okay because the job was okay, the money was going okay, it was just after the so-called Celtic Tiger. So the people weren't actually irresponsible in their borrowings considering the circumstance they were in at the time. But of course, as times have moved on and as the economy has diminished, of course, their mortgage payments have not diminished accordingly. And because the mortgage period was increased in a lot of cases from, say, 20 years to 25 years, even some up to 35-year mortgages, I believe, are out there. Well, there's no way anybody can predict an economic model 35 years in advance based on the existing system. So those people are most at risk of the foreclosure process. So to stave off that foreclosure process, the only real way to do that is to offer the absolute maximum you can after you've taken care of the basic necessities of life, i.e. electricity, gas or oil, food on your table, or maybe all three together, you know, shoes for your children's feet, warm clothes for the winter. After all those essentials are taken care of, whatever you have left, by all means, offer all of that to the finance house.
It doesn't matter what institution it is. If it's a lending institution or bank or whatever, if money is owed, you can simply send in an offer. It doesn't have to be written. Okay? And if, for example, if you owe money to a bank for a mortgage, for example, which is, I think people need to get familiarised with this in relation to mortgages, all you got to do, like I said, if you owe €1,000 a month and you can only afford to pay 400, pay them the 400. Don't not pay something. Don't stop paying because you can't make the full repayments. Okay? This is the mistake that people make. They stop paying because they can't.
And a lot of people walk away from their homes, from their businesses.
Yeah, you don't have to do that. This is very simple and uncomplicated. All you got to do, and you don't have to ask permission, you just have to act in a sovereign capacity by taking control and making the decision. And if you can afford to pay 400 a month and feed your family, give them 400 a month. If you can only afford to pay 200 a month, give them the 200 a month, feed your family. That's the priority.
And why can't they refuse?
Well, if they refuse, they, in law, cancel the debt. The debt is cancelled. If somebody refuses an offer for the other party to make restitution, and if they continuously do this, they've actually cancelled the debt in law. That's the whole debt cancelled in its entirety.
So, don't panic, because there's a solution. And the solution is to effect payment. Just because you don't have enough to pay doesn't mean you should pay nothing. You should always offer the maximum you can. If you offer the maximum you can before, particularly before you go into a default situation, but even if you've gone into a default situation or you can't afford to pay, but particularly before, if you know next month you're not going to be able to afford to pay your mortgage or whatever, send them an offer now to say, next month the maximum I can pay is this.
And the thing seems to be that the lender cannot refuse once you start effecting payment.
No. That's very important to remember. When you make an offer to a lender, because they are claiming basically you owe them, you acknowledge this by saying to them, yes, I owe you, and I'm aware it should be 1,000 or 2,000, whatever. All I have is 500 or 50. I'm offering that to you, and I'm acknowledging that this situation exists, and I'm doing my absolute best. My intent is to try to pay you. You cannot be shot down in a courtroom for attempting to do the right thing. If however, you refuse, you're in trouble. Because if you look up intent, you'll see to refuse is to have malintent, to attempt to evade or to avoid. And yes, they will react badly as far as you're concerned in those circumstances.
And what are some of the methods of effecting payment?
Simply, if you have a checkbook, post them a check, okay, of say 400 euros. But pretty much effecting payment, and let's say performing on the contract, is your intent to perform on the contract is key. Not that you have enough to make the payments, it's your intention to perform is the real thing.
So even if you only have 1 cent or 1 euro?
Pretty much, yeah. I mean, if you can't feed yourself and sustain yourself on the planet, well, how can they get any money anyway? So if you, excuse me, you need enough, excuse me, currency units or whatever to sustain yourself on the planet with food, eat, and the rest can go towards paying a corporation, a legal fiction entity, paper construct, so you can perform on this debt. So even if it was 100 euros a month, pay them the 100 euros a month. But even better again, pay them not every month, but every week. So if you can only afford to pay 100 a month, pay them 25 every week. So the intention to perform on this alleged debt, you know, you're not refusing to perform on this. You've actually increased your intention by fourfold. They can't get a judgment.
You can multiply your intent.
Yeah. You can multiply your intent four times. Do it every week. Don't wait for next month. Do it every week. And if you don't want to send a check, go into the bank and lodge it to that account. Okay? But if you're doing it by cheque, write the account number on the back of the cheque, just in case things go astray into another account. Write the account number on the back of the cheque and send it in. To simplify that again, you can just walk into the bank with 25 washers, euros, fill in a lodgement slip, obviously to that account, and slide those washers across the desk, and you get your receipt for the lodgement, and that's it. You perform on the debt. Do that every week. Four of those receipts, proof, documented proof that you've performed on the debt, not once but four times in that month. They can't get a judgment against you to leave your home.
And I think you should make it clear that this is for people who are struggling to feed their family. This is not for people who want to get away with paying their debts.
No. I don't really give any kind of suggested remedy, let's say, to people who are already dealing in commerce, because they become mini bankers themselves, don't they? So it's either, if you're dealing in commerce, well, you got to expect the hits, so take the hits. But the only thing you really need to safeguard is your home, your family home. That's all. The rest is a bonus. If you can get other people to slave away and pay you rent and pay mortgages and other bills for you, well, then you're no better off and different than the banks that have tried to steal from you in the first place.
Do you want to briefly describe the actual offer?
The offer itself is quite simple. Again, simplicity is key to a lot of situations, as I'm sure people agree. The official offer is simply this. Piece of paper with the words official offer written at the top to bank, whomever the bank is, from the person's name to now operate account 123456 7, the euro symbol or dollar symbol, wherever you're from, write in the amount as satisfaction on all account demand obligations signed by, you would simply staple either the cheque, the postal order, the bank draft, or indeed, if you really have to, the actual currency note itself, the euro or whatever, staple it to this piece of paper, fold it, address it to the bank. Don't address it to somebody in accounts, because your contract is not with the guy in accounts. If you're contracted to Bank of Ireland, shall we say, that's who you must send the offer to. Once you send it into Bank of Ireland, they can determine which department or who should get it after that. So send it directly to the bank and then make sure you can actually perform on it. So don't send it an amount that you can't afford. You must remove ego from this situation. I think it's very important. You might want to pay more, but if you can't actually pay more and you promise to pay more than you have, where are you going to end up? So be realistic. Do your budget. Budget for food, clothes, energy, whatever. Send it in, whatever you can afford at the end of that. And if you have three or four demand obligations, total them up, divide a figure by what you have left, and send each one an equal amount. And I think that's important too. Make it equal between all of them. Because if you show favoritism to one over another, potentially you could end up in a court case situation where why have you basically reduced their payment and not their payment. So I think it's equality, right? That's what everybody is talking about. This is basically what MABS used to do. They don't quite do this anymore. But basically this was the process.
Have you heard stories whereby people are walking into banks and handing €5 over the counter or whatever it may be?
Yes. That's another method. This was basically the original method, and I'll give a little bit of credit here to Harry from We The People, www.wethepeople.ie. Now, what simply Harry did is Harry realised this is what the system is made out of. The system is constructed of offer, acceptance, and consideration. And he wasn't able to afford to manage the full payment, whatever it may have been at the time. But he didn't want to show malintent. So he said, I'm going to show positive intent. And he wasn't much for letter writing at the time. He likes, he's a man of action, as they say. He likes to do, to demonstrate. So he simply walked into the bank, up to the counter. He said to the girl or the man behind the counter, I don't know which. He took the currency note out and he said, this is to be lodged into account, yada, yada, yada. And he slid it to them. And apparently he's been maintaining that position for 17 years.
Approximately 17 years ago, I had a situation where I allegedly would owe a lot of money. And I had a lot of issues at the time to deal with. So I had to put my thinking cap on very quickly. So probably talking about $250,000 at the time, which was a lot of money, of course. So everything that I had worked for would have been gone very quickly if I had engaged legal opinion or counsel. But I had to do that initially just to handle that situation, because there's another six similar situations at the time to deal with, kind of maggots. So what happened was, the idea was to come to an agreement of payment in this particular matter. So the solicitor I had engaged to supposedly look after the situation said that there was a call-up date in the High Court. Essentially, there were two High Court cases and one Circuit Court case all together at the same time. So the Circuit Court case, of course, we're all familiar with the situation where courts are just to deal with money. So the District Court deals up to $5,000. Beyond that, it goes into Circuit Court. The ceiling of the Circuit Court is around $38,000. Beyond that, goes into the High Court, and the monies are unlimited. Okay, so one Circuit Court and two High Court would have been a wipeout in fees alone. So the Circuit Court case I dealt with. The other two cases were coming up with the solicitor involved. He stated that there was a call up for these cases to be entered in for a hearing in the High Court, and if I didn't engage,
I'll let you guys get on with it. I might sit in for a while just in case. But
all right, everybody, we're back on. That was a quick 33 minutes. I didn't know it went so fast. I hope it didn't skip over anything or a lot of good things. I wasn't paying much attention. I was listening to some of Messi. He was giving me a bunch of good material. Todd's on a little bit of a break here. And I guess while I got a few seconds, I'm going to go ahead and say that anybody wants to come check out Mike Pochesny, he's coming on at 9 Eastern, 8 Central. He's on Truth Broadcast Network, and he's also on BigPZone.com, so go check him out. But yeah, let's get into this, Doug, Nick, for as long as you want to stay on, Nick.
Yeah, no bother, Stephen. Where were you now before I only came in when you were just taking a break, so let me know where you guys were.
Well, we were just getting into the heart of it. I've been told, I don't know if you were in here when I told Nick the story that 9 years ago I went through a bankruptcy, and I had a bankruptcy lawyer tell me that I can pay small portions of money on things like credit card bills, utilities, medical bills, and other things. But he stopped short of saying anything of a mortgage I could pay small amounts on. As a matter of fact, he told me I had to pay full amounts or as much as I could past the full amount of the monthly mortgage. So evidently he told me incorrectly or he lied to me, one or the other.
Yeah, well, it's anything, whether it be mortgage or any alleged debt, is the same thing. I mean, the official offer, as we've called it, as Vin has said and Harry has said, we had to give it a title for usage on the internet or whatever when people are referring to it and using it. It came about through Harry. Harry deserves full credit for it. He used it many years ago. You probably heard it in that podcast, and to great effect. And since then, last two years, I'm using it for an outstanding amount to one of the banks over here that simply was not manageable. It was impossible to manage with the crash that came along and all that. So it's basically backed up in the contract law books. I suppose it is as simple as walking into the bank and lodging what you can afford. So if you owe $1,000 a month, if you're supposed to pay $1,000 a month, or they want you to pay $1,000 a month, and you simply haven't got it, all you can muster up is $300 a month. You go in and you pay that. You pay the $300 every month. You're still performing. You're still keeping up your end of the contract. You're not in breach of contract. If you pay nothing, because you're stone broken and you think you don't really have it. Well, then now you're in breach. So even if you pay $10, if you owe $1,000 and you pay $10, you're substantively performing on the contract. And that's how it's backed up. It's backed up by the doctrine of substantive performance. And that's in any of the contract law books. I'll read from what have I got. I've got the law of contract here. One of the books is Cheshire, Fifoot and Fumstance, Law of Contract. And it's basically, it states, the courts, in their desire to do justice between contracting parties, have developed what is called the doctrine of substantial or substantive performance, which in effect has somewhat relaxed the requirement of exact and precise performance on entire contracts. According to this doctrine, which dates back to Lord Mansfield's judgment in Boone versus Eyre, 1779, if there has been a substantial, though not an exact and literal performance by the promisor, the promisee cannot treat himself as discharged. Right. So what that basically means is, if I owe you, let's say I'm supposed to pay you $50 a month of a debt I owe you. If I give you $10, I have substantively performed. I've done my best to keep up my end of the bargain. And it's especially, I've done especially well, given that you are the one that hindered me from paying you. So, I mean, in this case, globally, the banks, or the financial institutions have withdrawn, currency from circulation. And that's what's, causing people trouble in coming up with the money, the amount required. So if you are going above and beyond, doing all you can to perform to the best level you can, you're falling in line with the doctrine of substantive performance. You're substantially or substantively performing on the contract. You're not in breach, and you are open to. To change, either party can change the contract, change the terms of the contract at any time. I have also here, I have Paget's Law of Banking, another book, another great book, and I don't have to read much of it. It's a section on the customer. The ISBN is Paget's Law of Banking by McGrath and Ryder, and the ISBN is 0406-333-521, if anyone's interested. A really, really good book. And basically, page 12, chapter 2, the customer. It says, what constitutes a customer? And I don't have to read very, very far to give you. It states, the law of banking proper is the law of the relationship between a banker and his customer. basically the relationship is that of mandator, the customer, and mandatory, the bank, but is nonetheless a relationship which embraces mutual duties and obligations and offers privileges to both parties. Now, what that states is the customer is the mandator, the higher party, basically. He's in charge of that little system. I mean, if you go to any good dictionary and you read what the definition of mandator and mandate, well, basically a mandate is a command from a superior official or a judge to an inferior, ordering him how to act. So if you're the mandator, you give the mandate, and that's the order how to act. So the mandator gives the order to the mandatory, the mandatory being the bank, the mandator being you. So it's open to you to alter the terms of that contract at any time. Once they may, now, when you can simply, as I said, walk in and pass over the counter what you can afford every month. But some people would prefer to have it in writing, to send a short note with the initial setting up of let's say an official offer, and a simple short letter would suffice. It would simply be offer to X bank, whatever bank, by yourself, Mr. whatever, Mr. X, to now operate on account 12345, $100 affected monthly as satisfaction on all account demands / obligations. Signed at the bottom, boy, BY, colon, your name. And simple as that. That goes stapled with a check, let's say, postal order. And effectively, once they detach the check from the letter, they have accepted your offer. They will lodge the check. They will lodge. If you are supposed to pay, or if they require you to pay $1,000 a month, and you've sent in a check for $300 or $400, let's say, they won't send you back that check. They will lodge the check. Now, they may send you back a letter which states, we've accepted your $400 as part payment of your monthly. We still want the other $600. But that's a counter offer to you. So that letter that comes back to you, which you will nearly always get, you just write on that letter, I'm happy with the contract as it stands, and post them back that letter. You've renegotiated the initial contract with them, you see. Now they're trying to renegotiate with you.
Right.
They're sending you a counter offer.
Right.
They're sending you a counter offer. If you throw that letter in the bin, or if you do anything other than send it back to them with that written across it, I'm happy with the contract as it stands, well, then you're accepting their
conditions.
Their conditions. So reset the conditions for it. So basically what you've done there is, some of the main points of contract law are simply offer, acceptance, performance, and then consideration. So you've made them an offer. They've accepted by lodging the money, lodging the check. You continue to perform. There's continued performance every month. So, and as I say, it's backed up by the doctrine of substantive performance. Some cases will go to court. They will take it all the way into court. And you just need to not be afraid. You're doing everything by the book. Governments do this all the time. Big, large corporations do it all the time. A corporation may be involved in a road building contract or a bridge building contract, and they may be due to get $50 million as the next payment of the job, and the government or the company that's hiring them to do the job comes forward and can only give them $20 million and renegotiates the deal, gives them maybe $10 million a month for the next 5 months rather than the $50 million up front, and the job still goes ahead. Governments do it all the time. Here in Europe, they may borrow from the central bank $10 billion, 10 billion euros, and that's to be paid down after over 10 years. 10 years comes and they've only got 6 or 7 billion paid down. So they renegotiate the deal, you know, they stretch it out further. Now, it may take 400 years to pay your mortgage at that rate, but you're still in your home. That doesn't matter,
right.
You're still in your home. There is precedent set here. There's a judge in Galway his name escapes me now. It might come to me. A judge in Galway ruled that there was a case up before the court. A man was allegedly owed 85,000 euros to one of the banks, and he was stone broke. He hadn't got much, and the judge told him to pay them. I think it was 5 euros a month, or 5 euros a week, one or the other. He said it may take 400 years to pay them, but the bank will be around a lot longer than you will.
Yeah, that's what they told me on the medical bills and stuff like that too.
Yeah. So there's precedent there for it. And as was said in one of the podcasts you played earlier, the master of the High Court here, whose brother, incidentally, is the head of the central bank here in Ireland also, but the master of the High Court stated the very same. You know, he said that basically people should pay the bank with promissory notes, IOUs basically. Simply write on a piece of paper, promise to pay $1,000.
That's right.
Next month, do the same. Promise to pay $1,000. Promise to pay, and just keep doing that. Yeah. You're performing to the best of your ability. You know, you're not in breach. You are acknowledging that you should be paying them, that you want to pay them. And in reality, in essence, the notes that you have in your pocket are promissory notes.
Yes, they are.
They're not money. When you look deeper into it and you get stuck into MPA, they're not money. What money actually is it's your labour and production. You know, if you do something for me, if you fix my plumbing, you've given me your labour and production for the day. That's what money is. I'll give you maybe $200 bills, but that's only a representation of money. That's a promise to pay. You know.
Yeah.
It's not actually money. We call it money, and day to day we call it money, but it's not actually money. They're promises to pay.
Yeah.
Our notes used to always have promise to pay the bearer.
Yes.
On demand for $100 or 100 euros or 100 pounds, whatever. They don't have it on anymore because, when they brought in this euro over here, they sort of changed things around a little bit. The legislation to bring in the euro basically stated it's to be used as a legal tender. And when you break down the legal language, the word as and that, it's not actually legal tender, you know, it's just to be used as a legal tender in place of, basically.
Right.
But that's so there's precedent set for it here. It happens all the time, the official offer. Not necessarily called that. But it happens all the time between governments, between massive corporations, between people, between friends, you know. If I owe you $1,000 and we agree on $100 a week, and you come to me and I say, geez, I've only got $20 now, and you refuse to take that. This is the other thing when you go to the court. The bank will never refuse.
That's right.
Your money. They may reject, or they may say they're not accepting. We can't accept that. They will not refuse because of refusal. Is basically admonishing the debt, basically.
I understand that now.
If I owe you $1,000 and I say to you, I've only got 100 for you now, and you say, I forget about it, don't want that, and you walk away, well, you don't want any money from me, you don't want any of the debt. You know, I offered you some money and you wouldn't take it. So they will lodge the money.
That's understandable.
So in the court, you just need, when it goes to court, if it goes to court, you just need to say, I'm performing.
I've got the paper to prove it.
Are they refusing to accept? You know? And they will not say they're refusing. They may say things like, we reject this. We cannot accept this. It's not acceptable. Are you refusing? Are you refusing my performance? And they will not. They simply will not. Because a refusal is basically an acknowledgement that, okay, there is no debt.
There is no debt, yeah.
So they will not, and it will it stands up every time.
Sure, it's totally understandable. Ty, do you have anything? I'd like to take me a couple minute break here.
Go on.
Do you have a question or anything?
Well, nothing specific. I'm just really, you know, picturing how all this happens in my head. I mean, you know, one of the things that's interesting is how they call themselves the master. What was it he said? The master of the court? Master of the High Court, yeah. So, I mean, you know, you can almost relate that to, you know, master of the High Court. You know, they're assigning themselves the title of being our master. because we are subject to their court. That's one of the things that ran through my mind. But yeah, I agree with what you're saying. I mean, we have to, you know, as long as you're making an attempt to service the loan, or you're making an attempt to do something, then you know, I don't see how they can really come down on you too hard. As long as you're not making a ridiculous offer, like you said earlier, you know, as long as you're not offering to make a, you know, $1 a month payment or something like that. But yeah, these banks use, you know, I think people forget that the banks use a form of legalese, just like the rest of the system, the court system and whatnot. So you have to be very careful how you word things, what words you use, whether it be, you know, in writing or verbally. You have to be very careful.
Indeed, that's why less is more. Less is more in this case. The less you write, the more power, the more important, the more powerful it is. If you write 16-page affidavits, you're leaving trapdoors and loopholes for them to catch you maybe 100 times in those 16 pages. You write, if you can fit it into one line, one sentence, that's it. That's all you write. That's why the short official offer note, that the written thing that you, that the verbiage that you put down, is as short as possible. You know, it's only like two lines. You send that off, and that explains it. You don't need to write 25 pages. You know, all these guys writing, you know, phone book affidavits, you know, these judges and barristers and legal experts for the banks, they're linguistic experts, and they specialize in finding trapdoors, finding ways to trip you up. And if you give it to them, if you give them plenty of ways to trip you up, they're going to, you know. And that's where an awful lot of these guys fall down with their 52-page affidavits and 42,000-page affidavits, you know. This is where they all fall down. Less is more, you know. You keep it as tight and precise and concise as possible.
Right, exactly. Yeah,
all
I
right,
agree
guys,
with you.
I'm back.
Hello, Steve.
Hi.
yeah, exactly. I agree with you. It's the more you, the less is more. The more you, the more of, the more ground you create for them to catch you on, the more, you know, you're creating a larger stage. The more you write, you're creating a larger stage for them to play upon and pick apart and trip you up on something. So, I mean, that kind of goes back to, you know, when people say it's better to just, you know, remain silent if you're confronted with someone from law enforcement, for example. If you're in that situation, it's better to just remain silent than to try to defend yourself or explain yourself away, because you're creating more avenues for them to trip you up or try to confuse you. Like on a previous show, we were talking about sovereignty, and they're trying to find ways to get you into what they call, or what is called, joinder. And so with this, with the banking, writing these types of documents, the less you say, like you said, the more solid your document is, the safer your document is, because that gives them less to pick apart.
Yes, and remember what I said from Paget's Law of Banking. You know, what the customer is, what constitutes a customer. You know, the customer is the mandator, and the bank is the mandatory. The mandator is the superior in this. The mandator is the one who gives the mandate to the bank.
Right,
and
exactly.
The definition of mandate, then, you know, the mandate is a command from a superior official to an inferior.
Right.
So in the definition of a customer in banking law is the mandator. The definition of the bank is the mandatory, taking instruction from the superior. They are the inferior, and the customer is the superior. So it's you that can renegotiate the contract. It's up to you. And too many people get a letter from the bank with maybe red writing across the top: final demand, warning, this, that, or the other. We may do this, or we may do that. We could take it to court, and you must pay this, or we may give you 3 months in jail, or all these. And people get afraid. It's used, intimidatory tactics really used to put fear into you, you know. And people don't realize this. People need to read. Well, I mean, it's a lot of people wouldn't read this type of material, but it's. I think I gave out the ISBN and the book there, but Paget's Law of Banking, basically, and it's so powerful. You the customer is the mandator, is the superior, and the bank is the inferior. So it's you that dictates how things are to go. Now, if they can shift you off that position, and if you're foolish enough to be shifted off your position, well, you've only got yourself to blame, you know. So no matter what they send you, no matter what letters, it's always going to be a type of counter offer, no matter how they word it. So whatever letter they send you regarding the situation, you simply send that letter back to them, written across the top of it. I'm happy with the contract as it stands. And right. as it means as you renegotiate it, as you set it up, as you offer to them, they accept it. Now you're performing. Could be 4 months down the line, you haven't missed one performance. You've performed 4 times. They send you out a letter saying this is not acceptable. You're falling behind. You've only paid, say, 400 a month off 1,000. What they want is 1,000. So now you're 600 behind each month according to them for 4 months. They might send you a letter saying you're in arrears 2,400. We demand this. We must have this. You send them back written across the top of that letter. I'm happy with the contract as it stands, and away to them. When it gets to court, they don't have a leg to stand on. Offer, they accept it. You're performing. Offer acceptance performance. It's backed up by the doctrine of substantive performance, and you being the mandator, them being the mandatory. It's all there. It's all in the read material. It's all in their material, their books, right. Their read material. This isn't some bullshit internet books or internet material. This is their solid paper material, their books.
Yeah, and I think over the years they've created this for the majority of the population. They've created this illusion. That they are superior, that they have power over you because they hold your money, they hold your account. For example, even a checking account or a savings account or mortgage loan, car loan, anything, they hold this position, or they give this demeanor like they are your superiors. Because they are your lien holders, or because they have your checking account, you know, you have your checking account with them, or your savings, et cetera, and there's been this illusion that has been built that banks are the ultimate authority in our society, aside from, you know, next to the government, and because they hold all the money.
Yeah, Todd, I've actually had my stepdad tell me. If the banks didn't get bailed out, and the banks don't get what they want, the entire world economy would shut down and collapse.
Oh, yeah.
And I thought, man, is that what Bill O'Reilly's telling people?
Yeah, because people have been led to believe that without the banking system, we just cannot exist. We can't have a society. We cannot function. We cannot survive, and that is it couldn't be further from the truth. I mean, banking. banking. I don't know how many of you are familiar with the information in the Bible, but just to use an example of something in the Bible, one of the only times that Jesus becomes irate or mad or violent in any way is when he throws out the money changers because
now he thrashes them.
Right, because it's deception, and what is deception? Deception is evil. Evil uses deception to control and manipulate. That's what the banks do. That's what the state governments do. That's what the federal government does. And these banks act like they have the ultimate power over us, and they don't. It's just all an illusion. I mean, you go into a bank, you know, to apply for a loan. The average person goes into a bank to apply for a loan. And you think that, oh, I've got to get, you know, I've got to get on my best behavior here, and I've got to dress up real nice because I'm going to go meet this person in a suit. Yeah, I'm going to go meet this banker, this person in a suit with a conservative haircut, and they're going to act all professional and superior, and I'm going to go beg them for a loan for a house. Yeah. And oh man, if I get to sign papers with them, oh man, I'm really lucky because the banker has approved me, and I've been approved by this banker that is the ultimate pillar of my community. And that's where the illusion gets created.
One step below God, right?
Right, exactly, and that's where the illusion gets created, and that's why people get into this mind frame, and like our guests tonight are saying, you know, that's not the case. This is what you can do. You are the mandator, they are the mandatory. Just like employer, employee.
Oh, yes, yes.
I was actually going to say, I'm probably going to slope off soon because I am feeling a bit out of my depth, but I think...
That's okay, Nick.
There were certain bits there. I think some of them reminded me of a slightly side angle on this. And I think anyone who's actually had any sort of loan or mortgage would equate to how, in a sense, the tricks are played on you. When you take out if you're taking out a mortgage, which is a long-term loan, almost everyone who's had a mortgage will have had probably quite a few letters from the person who's lent them the money is saying, right, we are letting you know that there's an increase in the interest rates. And, you know, I would imagine it's probably the same there and university. Normally it says on there, you don't need to do anything. This will just be dealt with automatically. They're asking you not to countermand their suggestion.
Hey, Nick.
It's an offer.
What's someone saying? You know, they're coming to you, you know, effectively, you know, they are your employees. That they are suggesting... And they are making that offer. And by the same token, where you are running this official offer, you know, you could, by the same token, say, no, I'm happy with the agreement as it stands.
Absolutely. Only put in an amount. Let's say it was 1,000 a month, and they tell you interest rates are going up. They send you a letter saying interest rates are going up. It's going to be 1,100 a month. You don't need to do anything.
They always say you don't need to do anything. That's what... We don't want you to reject this. Well, not reject it. We don't want you to form the correct response. We'd rather you just didn't do nothing at all, and then it just carries on.
Nick.
Yeah. Right, exactly. Steve wanted to say something.
Yeah, Nick, I've got an off-the-ball question. Didn't you tell me that one repeater, if it started acting up, I could stop it and then start it right back up?
Yeah, if you just hit the stop... And the start, you will kill out any of us if we're talking. It won't kill out your voice, but the one you've got, if it's a bit flaky, just stop it, restart. It may reset itself.
Okay, I'll try it. Hopefully, I won't lose the whole show.
No, just flick it quick whilst you're doing some talking, and then no one else gets cut off in the middle.
All right. Yeah, like I said.
Just before you go on, there's another point admin just said in the chat box, and he's very correct. The actual contract with the bank was created by you when you first filled out the application form for a bank account. Most people don't read all the finer details, but when you were 17, 18 years old, whatever, you opened your first bank account with your local bank, Bank of America, or whatever it may be, you created the contract. That's the initial contract. And in that agreement, it states we... reserve the right to change terms, conditions, do this, do that, do the other. That's the actual contract with the bank. That's the main contract. The initial application form, the initial opening of the account. Anything that comes after that, further down, if you get a mortgage, a car loan, a credit card, anything that comes further down is only an extension of that.
Yeah, I've got a question for you guys, and anybody can feel free to jump in and answer this, but I've seen this happen to a lot of people where, especially in today's economy, where people are living paycheck to paycheck, and let's say their employer bounces one of their paychecks or multiple paychecks, what have you. Could be just one, could be multiple. And then that causes a chain reaction in their bank account, in their checking account, where they, you know, they keep, you know, bills get bounced and things like that, and charges get bounced. So then it creates this giant transaction or chain of events where the bank comes to the person, the owner of the checking account, says, hey, you owe us all these non-sufficient funds fees and this and that because look what happened. And, you know, you're saying, well, wait a minute, that was actually the responsibility. That's actually on – my employer that bounced my paycheck.
Yeah.
What are some ways to handle that with the banks?
Well, it's you can't say it's somebody else's responsibility. This is the whole thing of being sovereign. You're responsible for every facet of your daily life, of your existence. You know, you're responsible for you. Nobody else can be responsible for you. If you want somebody else to be responsible for you, for anything that happens to you, well, then you're putting yourself in the status of slave rather than sovereign, you know. So whether you need to have some, in case that may happen, if you're happy for to work a week and have whatever you might call your boss or your employer give you a check every week, if you're happy for that, well, you need to have a little bit put aside just in case of something might happen in the future or whatever may happen. You're basically responsible for you, so you can't shift blame to somebody else and say it's all his fault, you know, in any aspect of your life, you know. If you walk
I understand it correctly, you're saying that it's fair for the bank to hold the person accountable to pay those fees when the employer maybe they wrote a rubber paycheck, you know, a bad paycheck to you, whatever, and you that caused the transaction. You're saying it's fair that the bank holds the checking account holder responsible to pay those fees, even though it was someone else that bounced the check?
No, I'm not saying it's fair. I don't think anything in banking is fair. I despise the way it is. But I'm just saying from your perspective, you can't point the finger at the boss man for not giving you the check in time or for not giving you your check. If you have a contract with me, think of the mafia, you know. You're meant to pay the mafia, the local mafia boss, you're meant to pay him $1,000 or $100 a week protection money. And he comes down to you next week and say, "Oh, it's not my fault. I haven't got it. Nobody came into my shop to buy anything." He's just going to break your thumbs. He doesn't care, you know. You've done a deal with him to pay him that protection money. So somehow you have to get him that $100. You have a contract with him, right? To bring a third party in and say, "Oh, well, it's all their fault. It's all you made a contract with him." So if you need, if that happens, and if your boss hasn't paid you for the last 3 weeks and your monthly payment is due, well, then maybe perhaps you have to set up an official offer.
You know? Right.
You have
to
give an IOU to the bank, you know, even go in and slip an IOU across. I promise to pay you $1,000. If it's $1,000 a month and you've only got $200 because your boss only paid you, your employer only paid you the first week and for the last 3 weeks hasn't paid you, so all you have now is $170, you go into the bank and you slip the $170 across the counter. Okay, you're $30 short, but you've substantially performed on the contract, you know?
Right. Yeah, and unfortunately...
You deal with your employer after. You deal with your employer later, and when those checks all come through, then if you see fit, you go in and you pay the rest, the balance, over to the bank.
Right, yeah. Unfortunately, what I've seen happen is, like, for example, if a person has an automatic deposit set up with their employer... The check goes in on, let's say, the second of every month. The money's there, you know, the second of every month or whatever. And then what happened was these people, the checks bounced because the employer didn't have enough funds in their payroll account. So the checks bounced, and then what happens is if the people don't pay the NSF fees or the non-sufficient funds fees within, I think it's 30 days or something like that, I don't know the specific time frame, but then the bank will just freeze the account if you don't pay them in full. And, you know, so that's a part, that's another aspect of how they can assert their control over certain, you know, certain situations.
But you've given them, see, a person in that situation has given them control. If you allow your money to be lodged by your employer into a bank account that's in your name, and then you have direct debits or whatever, monthly payments coming out of that account going for your bills and for your rent and for whatever, you're giving the bank full control over, basically over your life, full control over all your finances. So yeah, naturally, in that regard, they can do what they wish because you've given them all the control. In my situation, I don't do any of that. Every month I walk into the bank and I lodge the money, the cash, into the machine for my official offer. When an electricity bill or a gas bill comes to the house, I go down and I pay that in the post office or in the bank or in the shop, wherever I pay it, with cash over the counter, and I get on with living my life. I don't have any direct debits or mandates or anything with the bank, like for payments going out, coming in and going out. I give them zero control over my life at all. If I have cash in the pocket, that cash is for me to spend. Now, if I spend it on an electricity bill or a gas bill or food or the rent, the mortgage, that's my choice what I spend it on. I can divide up my money where I think it needs to go. That's not up. I would not leave that up to a bank.
Right. Yeah, that's why I think it's a bad idea for people to get when they set up those automatic debits where you can have your bills automatically taken out at a certain time each month, and as with employers, you can set up to where you can have a automatic deposit of your check every month, and then you, like you said, you get into this situation where you become dependent on that, and then people take it for granted, and then one day something happens and the whole system, one thing happens and then the whole thing gets it's like a train wreck, and then you're in that situation because you were dependent upon all these other third parties to handle your business and to handle your finances.
Yeah, it seems so simple at the time. It seems the best option, the easiest option. It's you're making $5,000 a month. Your outgoings are $2,000 a month. So set up direct debits, mandates with the bank to just pay everything out. And all's good. It's simple. But then when your money drops, your income drops, you're in problems. You have problems. The bank has full control over all your finances. You're not taking in enough to cover your debts, cover what you owe, and the bank is now taking charges out of that as well. So they're actually charging you for having control over your whole existence. It's the complete opposite to sovereignty, to recognizing your sovereignty. You're giving away control. It's like the same with politics. People expect to be minded and cared for by a politician. They give all their power, all their control over to a local politician or whatever by voting for them and voting for a system and a politician to look after them. I mean, it's like the old saying, about Greece, about Athens, when the freedom that the people of Athens seeked was the freedom from responsibility, then they ceased to be free. They wanted freedom from responsibility. They voted in a political system. Next of all, they ceased to be free.
That's like if you break down certain words, you'll realize what the true meanings of them are. Just like, for example, a really good one is the word government. Government, if you look at the second part of that word, ment or mente, it comes from the word mente, which means mind. So
the government.
M-E-N-T. So you govern the mind. Now, how many people, this would be a great question to pose to people, but all these people that think that we have to have government to survive. So pose a question to them like this. Do you think that in order to be a free individual and have a system of a system in place that functions in order for everyone to survive, do you think, or is it your belief that you have to have a body of people that govern your mind in order to exist and be a quote free person? Do you feel you have to have your mind governed? And most of them are going to say no.
Well, you look at the word in politics, poly being many, and ticks being bloodsuckers,
Yeah.
If many
exactly.
So you're allowing your mind to be governed by many bloodsuckers, many parasites.
Right.
A tick is a parasite, basically.
Absolutely.
So when you break it all down, and this is where they come from, and this is the etymology of these words. That's not just semantics or just horseplay with words. That's actually where they come from,
Well, look at the word represent. If you go, and this is a really, I love this one. If you go into court and you have an attorney representing you, you break down that word, represent.
Oh, yeah.
In other words, they are,
You're present in court, but you're incompetent. You're of no use, so you have to be re-presented.
Right, exactly. And that also falls back to, and this goes a little bit back to the sovereignty subject, but you are not a living being. You are declared under maritime law as dead. And so what they're doing is they are representing you to the court as your straw man, as your corporation, not a living being.
Even if you walk into the court yourself and the judge will ask you, are you representing yourself? Well, what sort of a ridiculous question is that?
Yeah.
You know?
Right.
An oxymoron, isn't it?
Yeah, it's ridiculous. It's just stupidity, ridiculous, you know. But if you go along with it, mostly unknowingly, you know, they have you. They have you. There's two entities there in the court. You know, you're there yourself as your flesh and blood sovereign being, but they want you to present as the fictional entity, you know.
I think it would be funny just to go into court and say, no, Your Honor, actually, I'm representing my other personality.
Yeah, but then you grant them subject matter jurisdiction by doing that, and they're all over you.
Yeah.
Just a second, I just have to get the dog in.
Yeah, no problem, Doug. I think I understand what the official offer means, because they've told me in the past so many of the things similar to the mortgage. They told me I could do this with the credit card debt, the hospital bill debt, most every other kind of debt. And I get it. They told me on a $100,000 medical bill, if I only had $20 a month to pay on it, that's what I could pay on it. That's what I'm not even so sure that there might be some states that have like a $20 minimum, $20 or $25 minimum you can pay on a big hospital debt. Or maybe it's even like a $5 minimum month.
Yeah. And you know what's sad is that with this whole central banking system coupled with the corporations that cooperate with it, everyone just somehow or another ends up being enslaved by this state of eternal servitude or perpetual servitude to the banking/corporate system. And there's very few people that can live their lives avoiding debt and escaping debt. I mean, look at how many people have gone to college to try to better their lives, and we have probably what's going to be the next financial bubble to pop is going to be the student loan debt bubble, which is approaching astronomical amounts. And, you know,
well, they're also talking about the commercial property bubble blowing up, going to blow up in our face too. One of these days.
That's right. And the scary thing about student loan debt is you can't discharge it.
The official offer for all of them works for every single thing. Every single thing. As I said, it's backed up by the doctrine of substantive performance. You being the mandator, them being the mandatory. Think of it like this, Stephen. If I owe you €1,000 and I give you 100, and I'm supposed to give you 1,000, but you come to me and I only give you 100, and then next month I give you another 100, and then another 100, and you take me into court, and you say, well, he owed me €1,000 and he won't pay me. And I say to the judge, well, I gave him 100, and then another 100, then another 100. He accepted each time. I am performing, I am paying it.
Right.
The judge won't make a determination against me. He can't make a determination against me. I am paying, and you are accepting. So what the hell are you doing in court? He'll say, what the hell did you bring this in here for?
Right.
He's paying you something. You're accepting it. So what are you doing in here? So they cannot make a legal determination against you, whether it be your home, a student loan, whatever it may be. Once you're performing, you know, it's
right.
As simple as that.
TI wants me to read this template and have you go through it with me.
Right.
Would that be okay?
Yeah, go further away, yeah.
I've got it up on the screen. I will put it up on the screen here, actually. Let me get the screen to where I can see the entire thing that he has written down. It says, this is a template of the official offer. Official offer. Offer to bank by person. To now operate on account 123456 for so many euros effected monthly as satisfaction on all account demands obligation signed by person. Rear of paper written on an angle across the official offer. Attached check may be payable to bank. If you get no response, then the offer has been accepted. So the checks keep going into effect performance on a contract. If a response comes, look at it very carefully. This is where you may try to shift the attention away from. This is where they may try to shift the attention away from the offer and attempt to get their offer in place. If responded to carefully, this cannot happen. Go check the seven elements of the contract. Any particular attention to accept, this is how you make an offer. Okay. Have you already gone through this, or?
Oh yeah, I mentioned that earlier. Not in that text, but yeah, that's what I mentioned earlier. That's the letter that you write. Basically, it's a short little brief little letter. As you read it out there, you know, offer to bank to now accept whatever $100 per month or $100 monthly as satisfaction on all account demands / obligations. And signed by at the bottom, BY, colon, and your name. You don't date it because it's in effect. It's not an offer just for that day, just for that date. And across the back, at an angle, yeah, you write official offer. Because often what they do, judges do it also, but these people, they'll get that offer letter in, like official offer letter in, let's say, and they'll put it face down on the table, look at a blank at the rear of it, which is blank, and say, well, I saw nothing. Scrumple it up and put it in the bin. Often a judge will do that. If you hand up a judge an affidavit or something else, he'll look down at it and he'll say, I see nothing of value here. And he'll push it aside. He's actually looking at the reverse. And it's blank. And so he's not telling lies. He has clean hands, which a judge always must have, the doctrine of clean hands. He must always have clean hands in every case. So he's actually not telling lies. He's just been handed up an affidavit and he's turned it face down. So that's where you write official offer across the back. So there can be no mistake.
No mistakes, yeah.
Yeah. yeah, it's as simple as that. You continue performance then. Even if they send you back the check. If they send you back the check with some old letter saying anything, you lodge the check again and again and again. And that shows your performance, your intent to perform.
And they can kick and scream and cry and yell at you and call you all kinds of names. It doesn't really matter, does it?
No, because when they get the case into court, which they could, and you land in court and you have evidence that you went in and you performed, every time you lodged that check, they posted it back out to you. And you lodge it again, they posted it back out. You've been performing. They've been refusing. Now, in court, you may say, well, are you refusing to accept? They'll say, no, we reject. Or we can't accept that. And if they're not refusing, they're accepting. I mean, if you don't refuse something, if I offer you a cup of tea and you don't refuse, you've accepted. So if they've accepted your check and lodged your check, it was attached, stapled, now not paper clips, stapled to the initial letter you sent in. They've detached it and lodged it. That's acceptance. That constitutes acceptance. So you have offer, acceptance, now performance. And they're probably the three most important points in contract law. You know? So.
Okay.
Was there any other point of that you were?
No. No. I think you've covered a lot of very good stuff tonight.
It's basic enough. It really is. I mean, as I said, we do it between ourselves. If I owed you $1,000 and when you came for it, all I gave you was 100 and you accepted to put it in your pocket and went off and then brought me to court. There's not a judge in the land. There's not a judge anywhere to make a determination against me.
Right.
Because I made an offer, you accepted, and I am paying it down. I am paying. The judges right. say to you, what the hell are you doing in here? And they say the same to the banks. Why did you bring this in here in front of me?
Because yeah. we thought you were stupid, Judge.
This is it. Well, what may try and trip you up? And you as the customer, if you're not fully have your wits about you when you're in court, they'll say a lot of jargon to you and you may agree. They may say, no, we reject your offer completely. We reject that completely. And you might say, oh, God, oh no. And you think that's it. You're done for. And if you then accept everything, a judgment that they may pass or then you've only got yourself to blame. But you must remember that a rejection, a non-acceptance, is not a refusal. They will not refuse, you know. If I say to you, if you offer me something and I reject that, that means, well, I may be open to another offer. If I refuse point blank, I don't want to do anything with you, you know. They will not refuse. They will not refuse. They have never, and they will not. They can't refuse. Simple as that.
Well, I appreciate you coming on tonight, Doug, and giving us all the information. I think if there's more stuff we can think of, maybe we'll have another show or another set.
I'm sorry I couldn't get on earlier. I was just a bit late getting back.
That's okay.
Yeah.
That's all right. I think we've got a lot of good material, and I understand a lot of things.
I'll come on another show. We'll have to talk about MPA at a later date. It's a fairly large topic, which I tend to use a few analogies and different things to bring it into layman's terms, away from the technical language that most people would hear on the podcasts and the YouTubes about MPA. That is necessary, but it doesn't get through to the average Joe Soap, the average guy on the street, average John Doe, you know. A lot of worries on their mind, whether it be bills, family, work, this, that, and the other. You don't really have the time or the capacity to absorb such technical language. So to break it down into simpler terms. But yeah, we'll do a longer piece, I think, on MPA, if you like, at a later date.
Sure, that's fine.
Certainly. Brilliant, Stephen. Well, look, it was lovely talking to you, Stephen, and Todd.
Yes.
Yes, you too. Absolutely.
Thanks for coming on tonight.
Not a bother. I'll chat to you later, guys.
All right. Have a good night.
All the best. Bye-bye.
All right, Todd. I'm not going to Skype much after I sign off here because I've got some kind of technical problem. I need to try to get fixed with my video before we go back on a Wednesday.
Right, right.
I've had you and Doug and Nick on the screen the whole night. And whenever I bring up my camera, it just says lost signal.
Huh.
So I got some things to work on. So everybody, I'll just say goodnight here. I'll put a song in the player and me and Todd will sign off here. I am Steve Roberts, and for Todd Foster, this is Cancel the Cabal. Good night, everyone.
Good night, everybody.